Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners. No prisoners. 1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter. You can and a broker at Daniels Trading. You can find me at turnerstake.com or on the Daniels Trading website. I work with speculators, hedgers. We do self-directed trading for online traders, broker-assisted trading, full service, even do some managed futures, anything really in between. If it has to do with futures and commodities, we certainly handle it. So be sure to check us out. Okay, so I was on Market Rally today with Chip Flory. That was great. Had a great time on there. And one of the things we talked about was spring wheat. That has definitely been a theme for me. I've been getting a lot of questions. Why are we following spring wheat so much? We never have, you know, in the past. But, you know, it is the big market right now that, you know, can keep on breaking out. You know, when we start looking at the, you know, just to give you an idea, you know, spring wheat has a trend line yield of around 46 bushels per acre. We're thinking it's going to be closer to 38 or 39. So we're thinking to lose 15% or 20% reduction in yields. You start calculating, what does that mean for ending stocks? You know, think about it this way. You know, on the commercial side, if people need that high protein spring wheat, there's not a lot of places they can go for it, so they're going to have to go out and get it. And, you know, a lot of commercials, you know, they don't care. I mean, if the market goes 50 cents either way, I don't think that's a huge big deal. But if it goes a couple of dollars either way, especially a couple of dollars higher, that is a big deal for them. I wouldn't be surprised now that the commercials are waking up to what's going on in the wheat market and what. Because the futures are trying to project where prices are going to be for new crop in next year. You know, the commercials may not be worried about or thinking about where prices are going to be next year, having to make buys for it. I mean, with, you know, we could be stuck with this tight carryout, you know, until next August, you know, or next September. So if commercials need this kind of high protein wheat, they better start securing it soon. And if we're going to have a carryout of 100 million bushels, I mean, now my records show that'd be the second tightest. When we were in when we were sub 150 in 2011, or is 2012? 2011, spring wheat got to $11.50 or $11.20. In 2008, when we were at ending stocks were at 68 million bushels, we were over $20 in spring wheat. Now that was a little bit different because corn was through the roof, beans were higher. That was right in the days of when we started doing the ethanol mandates and China was really picking up on their soybean exports. Dollar was lower, crude was a lot higher, a lot of different things going on to kind of a perfect storm there for wheat. U.S. crop failed, Australia's crop failed, and you had two crop cycles in a row in different parts of the world with failures. But you know what, that July wheat, spring wheat, we're at 650. I don't see any reason why I couldn't go a dollar higher, considering that we're at 1150. You know, with stocks, with more stocks back in 2011, and we were above 20 with, at 68, which has got to be just extreme price rationing to get there. I mean, I don't see why we can't get to 750 in spring wheat at some point. I don't think it's going to happen over the next couple of weeks, because there's not a lot of weather issues going to go on. Like the crop conditions are going to probably stay stable in the spring wheat, because whatever damage is done, it's pretty much done. You get some rains, you don't get some rains. The yield is going to probably be what the yield is at this point with that spring wheat. The thing is, we're going to have to go in there and actually see what happens. I think we're going to have a shortage. I think we're going to be at 100 million bushels. And you know what? It is inelastic supply and demand. What we need domestically is what we need. That has already been contracted. That is what a lot of food processing companies have a certain to set demand and what they're contracted to do or what they're going to produce. And that's just the way it is. What usually comes down then is the exports demand. So we're going to have to price ration through exports and really just cut off the exports. And we saw the same thing happen with soybeans a couple years ago. The crush was the crush. And what really happened was we stopped exporting and we basically had to price ration and price out the market through the export market. And that's when we saw beans in the teens. So I think the same is going to happen with spring wheat. The commercials are going to have to secure and lock up whatever they need, especially the big food processing companies. And then on the export side, we're just going to have to basically shut it off and price it so high that people buy their high quality wheat elsewhere. And I really think that's going to happen. And this is not going to happen overnight. You know, at some point, the money flow comes into that market and the commercials realize there's not going to be enough high protein wheat. And this is the big if I'm right about yield. If yield really is 38 or 39 and the ending stocks are then projected to be around 100 million bushels, that's when this happens. But you know what? The USDA hasn't changed it yet. They're still at 40, 46 or something like that. And when the WASDE comes out in July, they may inch it down, or not inch it down. Maybe they knock off a few bushels, but I doubt they're going to take off six. I can't see the USDA going that fast and that aggressive on it. So it's going to take time. It's going to take time for us to figure out exactly what the issues are and what the yields really are. So that's why I keep on talking about it. I still like our March, May spring wheat. And I got to say, on any kind of big sell-offs in the market, I remember when soybeans went into a big rally a couple of years ago when, you know, corn was up in so much in 2012. You know, if we get a situation like that with spring wheat, the market always seems to always let you get in at some point, right? Like, you know, some kind of news comes out, we're up, then all of a sudden we're down 10 cents when we should have been up 20, and, you know, and 2 days later we're back up to where we started or hitting the highs again. And the wheat market will do that. Like, it has given traders, if they wanted to get long this market, the ability to get in. But it's tough. It's small. Like, sometimes, you know, some brokers and traders I talk about are surprised I talk about spring wheat just because the market's so small. You know, like, you really want to be talking about that and having a lot of people trade it. Well, you know, it definitely is a swim at your own risk kind of market. You know, the open interest and the volume is okay. It's not like oats and rice, which is almost too small to trade. You know, at least the Minneapolis wheat does have about 20 or 30,000 open interest, and there is some pretty good, you know, decent volume in there. So it is tradable. It's not like oats and rice, where I think, God, what's the oats? I mean, December oats open interest. Hold on a second. I'm going to pause this and look a couple of these things up just so I don't have you guys waiting around for me to figure out. All right, I'll be right back. Here we go. Like, December open interest is only 2,500. That's kind of crazy. You know, the July wheat or September wheat for spring wheat is 30,000. At least that's respectable, you know. So, and you know, funny as it is, oats, we can have some seriously tight oats stocks. What's interesting about oats is that it's grown in primarily the same region and area as that spring wheat in the northern plains. So, I mean, I don't want to start speculating in oats, but just because it's such a small market and it seems like even a regular trader can send it limit up or limit down if it's trading in big size. But, you know, the oat market, I would not be surprised if oats really took off, which could be good for corn. If there is a shortage of oats, like there's going to be a shortage of spring wheat, or at least the way I think they're both going to, we're going to both have really tight stocks for oats and spring wheat, which are, you know, which again are grown up in the northern sections of the United States, than northern plains. A lot of it is anyways. I think we're going to see a lot more feeding in corn and feed wheat for oats, but probably corn up there. They do a lot of corn and the basis in corn, you know, you get to North Dakota, it's not pretty. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw more usage in corn, which would be nice. I mean, how much is that going to be? I'm going to have to go back and really hit the books and figure that out, like how much oats is not going to be available for feed and usage up there, and how much could be exchanged for, you know, corn substituted with corn. But I would think that would be a little bit of a demand kicker for corn. As I was talking with Chip today on Market Rally and also in recent newsletters, we think that the corn acres are going to come down a little bit too. So kind of in a related note, not only do we think corn acres are going to come down, we're thinking the yield on corn is going to be, right now the USDA is saying about 170 and change. I think it's 170.7. I wouldn't be surprised if we eventually get down to 165, 167. Now, when the WASDE comes out, are we going to see that number? I doubt it, which is still a ways away. But I think what's more likely is that we start seeing 168, 169 on the corn yield. And I think we're at 167. I really do. Just based on analysts, the weather, the satellite people, the farmers we talk to all around the country, no one's having a great year. I mean, there are a lot of good years out there, but a little bit subpar, but no one's knocking it out of the park on the in growing right now with corn. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that. And if we do get a, you know, maybe a 500,000 acres less in corn, which we comes out in the report on June 30th, and let's say we have 80, you know, maybe we're at 89.5 planted, and then maybe we harvest 82 million acres, start using a 167 yield, and carry out's about 1.7, 1.8 in corn, which isn't so bad. It really isn't that bad. I mean, all of a sudden, in my mind, December corn at 380, 375 becomes a pretty good support level if you're calculating 1.7 or 1.8 new crop carryout. So I think we're going to see, like, I know I just talked about a couple of things in the grains there, but I think they're all kind of related. The wheat, the oats, and the corn, whether it be protein or feed or whatever it might be, they're all in the acreage situation. I think what's going to happen is December corn finds support at 380, 375. I think the wheat's going to keep on going higher with the spring wheat leading the charge just because we're so tight and we're still early in the game. That's going to help the Kansas City and the Chicago wheat go higher. Probably see some more short covering in Chicago wheat if I'm right about Minneapolis. If Minneapolis keeps on going higher, I mean, if, right now we're in, July's at 3658. Where is September? Let's see. There we are, September 663. You know, if, let's say Minneapolis wheat goes to $7 in September. You know, I can see Chicago wheat breaking that 480, 485 area. And those are the highs from, January. And then all of a sudden you get a whole new round of short covering. Not saying that's going to happen, but very well could. And I wouldn't be surprised to see the, you know, the protein trade really start to kick up at that point. If the yields really come down. You know, it's one thing for the market on the spring wheat to say, okay, we're at a 130, we're trading a 138 yield, you know, and we're going to have really tight stocks. It's another thing for when the USDA actually prints it and puts it on that supply and demand table, and you look at it and you're like, geez Louise, we're at 100, you know, million ending stocks. How is this going to happen? And what do prices have to do? And that's when, you know, that's when sometimes it hits the fan and you can see the market really, really take notice. So we'll see. You know, maybe it is all fully priced in, but in my experience, usually, you know, it'll run its course, and then when the USDA confirms if it's really tight like that, you can see another leg, you can see another move higher. But that's what happened with soybeans a couple of years ago, back of the to the downside. This is about 2 or 3 years ago, but this is when soybeans were really tight. We're at like $13 or $14, and everyone was predicting this huge increase in soybean acres. You know, where would we get? We were adding on like 6 or 7 million soybean acres, and they were just saying, like, if we add on 6 and 7 million soybean acres at their current yield, you know, we're going to go from tight stocks, you know, like 100, 150 to, you know, 400. Million carryout, and that's the difference between $13 soybeans and $9 soybeans. And then new crop was just trading 12, 13, kind of a little bit behind old crop, but sticking with it. And then what happens when the USDA finally prints that number, which the whole world was talking about was coming? Beans go down $1.50 in a month. So, you know, it's so we'll see here. I mean, there's the USDA has to print it. The USDA has to give. Has to, you know, basically prove what a lot of traders are thinking are going to be there for the tightness in the spring wheat. And, you know, sometimes you get a sell the, you know, buy the rumor, sell the fact type deal. But I think in when you get situations like this where you're cutting down the stock so much to the point where we'd be at the second tightest, you know, all time, I think that'd be more of a confirmation of the move rather than a buy the rumor, sell a factual. But we'll just have to see. It's where there are guys like me that talk about this stuff. Some of us are right, some of us are wrong. So, oats, I don't even want to get into oats. Oats are tight. I don't want to get into oats because it's such a low volume, low open interest market, but maybe from just a curiosity or a you know, something to keep your eye on. I think oats are going higher too. I'm not going to trade it. It's too small, but I do think oats are going to go higher. And that's, you know, my feeling on the grain markets. Another thing that I was talking about recently is, you know, I don't know how bullish I am on corn and soybeans based on term structure. Like, you look at the spreads and they're not doing a whole lot, which tells me that supply and demand wise, we do have enough corn and soybeans to get by. But the spreads in the wheat market are, especially with the spring wheat, are going up. So what that means is if the spreads are going either a lot higher or the spreads are going a lot lower in calendar spreads, that means you have real supply and demand changes in, structurally within the market. But if you get a big rally in corn and soybeans, let's say corn goes up 15 cents and soybeans are 30, and yet, you know, Nov versus Nov beans are still basically the same, or you know, July D's corn hasn't budged. That just means that the whole complex, like corn, is just repricing itself because, you know, maybe protein now is going to be priced higher. It's usually an outside market deal. Like, you know, the dollar goes down. Well, then commodities should all go up, but the spreads aren't going to move much because all the commodity prices now should go up around the same percentage because the dollar falls, right? So that's kind of what's going on with wheat. Spring wheat's going through the roof. The protein side of that whole trade is going higher, and then soybeans and corn have to be priced appropriately. It's not really a supply and demand issue. It's more of a protein differential repricing of that asset class. So that's why we can see soybeans go up, corn go up, the spreads don't really move. That's what's going on. So that's where we are on the grain markets as far as a trading point. I mean, I want to get exposure to spring wheat. You know, maybe we'll look for some sell-offs here to get back, to try to get in. I like our wheat spread. I'm kind of bearish on soybeans. I think selling, into resist. I wouldn't want to chase this market. Like, if we make a rally into resistance, I think I'd rather sell it than buy it. I don't think we're going to break out unless we get some major weather issues. Same thing with corn. I think we're going to be in between 375, 380 in Dece, and maybe the top part 420. I know it's kind of a big range, but it's really going to depend on June and July weather. But the weather looks good. Weather is cool. We're going to get some moisture. Shouldn't be too bad for most of the corn areas. I think corn's going to be choppy. I really do. Hopefully get to $4 again. It'd be nice to have December corn around $4. Let's see what else we got here. Livestock, cattle is really getting beaten up here. You know, it's interesting, like, the cattle on feed reports have been kind of bearish going all along. If you take a look at, you know, all the cattle around, you know, the country that are off the lots, we don't have that much. So a lot of cattle's come on the lot, but we don't have a whole lot backing up off the lots. So sometimes some people are making arguments for the cattle on feed reports. Yeah, they've been bearish, but there's not a lot of cattle behind it that's still waiting to come on. That's been an interesting point. Yet the cash prices have been coming down. So cattle typically makes a spring high. Seasonally, we'll put in a high sometime during the spring. Looks like that came at the end of May, beginning of June. Wouldn't be surprised if we chopped around. We'll come to a big support line with cattle. So we will. I would definitely keep an eye on that. As far as hogs go, still got strong demand. Spot months are pretty strong. It's going to be a wild ride here. As we get to the end of the summer, you start to see seasonally it tails off in anticipation for all that barbecue and summer demand to start to wane. And that's what's going on there. Finally, energies. Crude has gone down farther than I thought it would. If you look at a chart of crude, you know, the spreads, I thought we had great trades in those spreads, being bear spread, Dece March and Dece June. We got out, which was really nice. I think we made, you know, that maybe, oh, on Dece March, I want to say we made about $500, $400 or $500, and out in the margin was only about $300 something. And then with the Dece June, I think we ended up making about 600 or 700, and the margin again was about 600 or 700. I was pretty happy with that. But those spreads are just keep on going. We're gonna, I mean, we could, if I think crude has a chance to going down or testing $40 here. I think at that point, U.S. shale companies just really aren't that price competitive anymore. And they're going to start pricing themselves out of the market. And OPEC, you know, will try to cut production or something like that. But here's the thing. When OPEC cuts production, it increases prices and just lets the shale companies to come in, pump more, and try to steal market share. Well, not steal, take market share away from them. So I think OPEC's in a tight spot. They really can't control supply, you know, supply anymore. And I would not be surprised if, you know, crude gets down to around 40 and we have a new range of $40 to $50, and we'll play the spreads in the range like that. I think for right now we have still have a lot of funds who are caught on the wrong side of this trade. I would expect some pressure. And until crude oil comes down enough where the shale companies really can't afford to keep on adding rigs and, you know, doing, taking on extra capacity, is probably when we'll see this turn around. Unless between now and whatever that point is, we get some real economic growth. But I don't see that. I mean, economic growth around is fine. It's not, you know, it's not record levels. It's not down in the dumps. It's just okay. We're chugging along here. So there's no reason to get excited about big economic activity, global economic activity, industrial activity to send crude demand up higher. So yeah, I think we're going to keep on heading down on that. You know, I've been bearish on natural gas too, but it seems like it's come down too far here to jump on that bandwagon. So in the newsletter, we're going to follow this crude oil market. We're going to try to figure out how to trade it. Might, you know, if we get down to 40s, might look into selling some put spreads, collecting some premium, just because that'd be such a big support level. You know, if OPEC starts to talk about, you know, cutting, you know, rattling the cages and cutting production again, maybe we'll try to get long. But I think I'd rather just sell the rallies. I'm still a bear structurally on this market. And I think with crude oil, if you're trading on your own or you're trading with me, and I'm not writing about it, you know, Rex in the newsletter, I still like selling the rallies in crude. I think that's going to keep on working for the most part. And then it's really going to be up to the trader to figure out if they like selling call spreads, selling the futures, buying, you know, buying put spreads, that kind of thing. But at $40, I do think you have to start either taking things off or maybe turning it around and going the other way. And as far as the trading side goes, yeah, besides my spring wheat spread, I still like the bear spread in corn, SEP versus March, even though we're gonna tighten up here a little bit on the ending stocks. 1.7, 1.8 billion carry out in corn still means probably a full carry in SEP versus March corn, so that'll probably come in. But it should lend support at that 375, 380 level for D's corn. Soybeans, I kind of fear for. If we have 90 million acres planted and a 48 yield, which I don't see why we wouldn't right now. Beans sound like they're going pretty well out in the country. That gives a new crop ending stock in beans of like 450 to 500 million bushels. That's no good. That's going to test $9 and maybe even put us in the high eights for soybeans. So bullish on wheat, which is led by spring wheat. Neutral to bullish on corn right now. I think we're going to have a range between 375 to 420 in D's. Kind of bearish on soybeans. The demand is not going to change. South America has a huge crop, and we're going to have a ton of acres in soybeans, and everything sounds pretty good from whoever we talk to in the country. Crude, still looking for it to continue to chop down. Cattle is... could become supported in here, but it's going to be choppy too. And with hogs, it's a hot market, but at some point, the demand is going to wane seasonally. So as we have trade recommendations and see opportunities, I'll put them out in Turner's Take. Otherwise, you can always contact me. You can find me on Twitter at Turner's Take. My contact information is in the show notes here. And if you have any questions, just let me know. Thanks very much, and good luck trading.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.